The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Well, good morning, everyone. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'd like to thank our regular host, Mr. Stephen Fleury, for the chance to guest lecture today's program, or to guest host, I should say. Not going to lecture to you. It's Labor Day in the United States and in Canada. I had to remind myself exactly what this day was supposed to be about, because as is typical with most holidays or bank holidays in the U.S. or Canada, they tend to lose their meaning as time passes on. According to the Department of Labor, this is a yearly national tribute to the contributions workers have made to the strength, prosperity, and well-being of our country. Now, I don't have to get into a lot of details here, but probably there's not going to be a lot of celebration of our workers' accomplishments to the strength and prosperity of this country. Instead, it's another day off work. It's another day to celebrate. But we celebrate in a very different way these days, it seems. I was just looking at different news stories about what takes place on Labor Day. This is from ABC News up in, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. It says it was a predictable start to the Labor Day weekend, and yet another reminder for the rest of Pennsylvania about the dangers of impaired driving. Pennsylvania State Police said in 2016 they had almost 20,000 arrests for drunk driving or DUIs, which was a 4% increase over the previous year. Corporal Adam Reed said one DUI is too many. When we're looking at the possibility of record-setting numbers, that's a lot. So we as law enforcement are concerned. Even more sobering, he said, is a simple question. For every person that's arrested, just how many more are out there on the roads eluding police? Good question. Another troubling point that's made in this article says whether it's alcohol or impairment through drug use, drugs now account for a full half of all DUI arrests. Down further, he says there are laws in other countries that are much more strict than ours, and they prevent crimes. Here it's more socially acceptable. And then the commentator here for ABC News said that's an odd comment and a sad social commentary that it's socially acceptable to be impaired and to get behind the wheel of a lethal weapon is socially acceptable. Yeah, it's a terrible statement about this celebration of what the workers and the workforce has contributed to this country. Like most other public holidays, drunk driving is a real concern. Now, things are about to change, as we know, as we see world events kind of deteriorate. And I've been reading through an inspiring booklet that the church produces. It's called The Wonderful World Tomorrow. And I've been going through that to really sharpen my vision about how God is going to change this world. It's a very practical book when you take time to read it. It gives real solutions to today's problems. Solutions that come from the Bible. The booklet opens up with a few different opposing prognostications about the near future. Mr. Armstrong said the first view of what the future holds for us is global destruction through war, through pollution, and overpopulation. In fact, as he points out, world leaders see that there's at least five different ways that this globe could be totally destroyed. And their solution was to salvage this world through a single world government. But of course, trying to imagine implementing a single world government of man systems is just about impossible. Would you submit to, say, Mr. Putin's form of government? Or would they submit to Donald Trump's form of government? You can go on through the list and see that nothing would really work. Another idea or view of the future is a little bit more optimistic. It's a reliance on science and technology that would bring unheard of prosperity. It would bring a life of ease and abundance. Every weekend would be like Labor Day weekend, where you have a short work week and then you spend time on holiday. But of course, that's not going to work either. And we've seen the revolutions of technology, but that too doesn't bring about this utopian condition. So what is the solution? Well, as the booklet points out, God will enforce the law. The Ten Commandments will solve problems. God's government will bring order. And the result will be abundance, a true utopia, fair and open to all who choose to follow those rules. That's what's going to make it happen. It will be a celebration of achievement from workers. But it's work that's under government. It's work that's under law. And that is a certain solution that we can all look forward to. The booklet opens up by analyzing some of the terrible conditions in this present evil world. And that's where we'll begin today. This is one of those days where I would like to have turned on the radio and heard Stephen Fleury talking, or one of our other guest hosts that are a little bit more experienced in analyzing world events. I had a topic all picked out for today. I was ready to present it. And then a hydrogen bomb exploded, quite literally. So that changed things around a little bit for me. North Korea, as you know, conducted a sixth nuclear test Sunday, just yesterday. One, it said, that's successfully detonated a thermonuclear hydrogen bomb, and one that would be capable of fitting on the top of an intercontinental ballistic missile. It was said to be about 10 times bigger yield than their last nuclear test from September 2016. And that test a year ago now had a yield of about 15 to 25 kilotons, or about the equivalent of 25,000 tons of TNT. Yesterday's test, or the September 3rd test, could have been as much as 100 to 120 kilotons. That's 8 times bigger than the Hiroshima 15 kiloton explosion. Now, that's a pretty frightening prospect. That's a pretty serious development. That's a really massive, massive bomb. I want to share with you the significance of a thermonuclear hydrogen bomb explosion of roughly that size, about 100 to 150 kiloton in New York City, just to demonstrate the size of that kind of an explosion. This is from the atomicarchive.com website, and it's an example about New York City. I'll just quote to you some of the highlights from this website. It says, a 150 kiloton bomb constructed by terrorists is detonated in the heart of Manhattan at the foot of the Empire State Building. The bomb goes off without warning at noon. It's a clear spring day with a breeze to the east. They go on to give some of the other assumptions that there isn't a warning for this. It's a clear day. It's an isolated attack, and that basically it catches everybody by surprise. It says at the end of the first second, the shock wave will have an overpressure of 20 psi, or pounds per square inch, at a distance of 4/10 of a mile from ground zero. Even the most heavily reinforced steel and concrete buildings will be destroyed. These buildings include the Empire State Building, Madison Square Gardens, Penn Central Railroad Station, and the New York Public Library. Most of the material that comprises these buildings will remain and pile up to a depth of hundreds of feet in places, but nothing inside this ring will be recognizable. That's within the first second of a detonation. Talks about the medical effects. With almost 900,000 people injured to various degrees, the task of caring for the injured will be beyond the capability of the medical system to respond. All but one of Manhattan's large hospitals lie inside the 5 PSI ring and would be completely destroyed. There aren't enough empty hospital beds in all of New York and New Jersey for even the most critically injured. It talks about the utilities being knocked out to Manhattan for several weeks. It says it is likely that many tens of thousands of people would become homeless. And then their conclusion, or their summary here, says, while this simulation of 150 kiloton nuclear explosion contains many assumptions and that uncertainty associated with any of the estimates is large, a number of points stand out. First, 20 square miles of property will be destroyed. 20 square miles. Second, 800,000 will be killed, 900,000 injured. Additional damage from post-blast fires will also create heavy damage. And lastly, coordinated national rescue and recovery efforts will be necessary. We really see that with even just a hurricane that we'll talk about later, those rescue efforts that draw from many states. So this bomb that was just tested, this thermonuclear hydrogen bomb that was tested just yesterday, has that kind of firepower available to it. Now, while it's unlikely the North Koreans would detonate a 150-kiloton nuclear device in New York City, it does give us a realistic view of what man is capable of doing. And actually, that's prophesied in your Bible. Just a side note, too, we had an article that was posted on our website September 1st by Callum Wood. This is on thetrumpet.com, and it says, North Korea sells chemical weapons to Syria. And it went on to talk about how they've been caught twice now within the last 6 months. The North Koreans trying to deliver chemical weapons to Syria. The world is trying to eradicate those weapons from that region, and North Korea is sending them in. What was interesting about this article is when I searched on Google just for the North Korean link to chemical weapon sales to Syria, this article by Callum Wood was the first one that popped up. So that's a great accomplishment for the Trumpet. Well, we'll take a break now and come back and talk about Bible prophecy and what it teaches us about the threat of nuclear disaster.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical, but world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com.
Can you imagine a world without famine, disease, and pestilence? A world free of crime, war, and hatred. Man has tried throughout history to rid the world of these problems, but to no avail. Will man ever find the way to peace? The Bible speaks of a soon coming utopia in which God will finally bring us peace. It will be a world governed by God's law of love. Poverty, famine, illiteracy, and escalating violence will be reversed. The dry and barren lands of the world will be made fertile, and resources will be plenteous. Sickness and disease will be replaced by robust and prosperous living. The language barrier will be bridged, and an education in the true values of life will flourish the world over. Beyond this bleak, unhappy, present-day reality is this soon-coming future. Our booklet, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, is free at our website, thetrumpet.com. Download it or request it free today.
The Trumpet Daily.
Well, we have to talk about some pretty scary times. We see events like this nuclear test. We know what's going on in the Middle East and other places around the world. It is pretty frightening if that's all you know. But the beauty of this work and our message is that we give hope. There is hope in all of this terrible news, really. The book of Isaiah, if you study chapter 6, is pretty unique. Isaiah the prophet was in vision, and he saw God, as we'll talk about in just a moment. But he also saw seraphim, which is a category of angels. And really, they're described in very few places or mentioned in very few places in the Bible. And Isaiah is one. Very few people to even have seen or heard a seraphim. Isaiah 6 verse 1 says, "In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw also the Lord sitting upon a throne, high and lifted up, and his train filled the temple. Above it stood the seraphim. Each one had six wings. With two he covered his face, with two he covered his feet, and with two he did fly. And one cried to another and said, Holy, 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 is the Eternal of Hosts. The whole earth is full of His glory." Try to think in your mind of what this experience would have been like for Isaiah. The sounds, the sights. He said, right there, for my eyes have seen the King, the Eternal of Hosts, in verse 5. Now, there was a purpose for God exposing him to this incredible experience. I mean, he could have just talked to him quietly at night when he was thinking or praying. But here, Isaiah had this vision. God wanted him to recognize the power behind the message. God had a job for Isaiah to do. Notice verse 8 says, "Also I heard the voice of the Lord saying, 'Whom shall I send, and who will go for us?' Then said I, 'Here am I, send me.'" What a great, great response. These are difficult times, and this is a difficult message. God is looking for people that are eager and willing to be sent to support a message. Verse 9, he said, "Go and tell this people, hear you indeed, but understand not, and see you indeed, but perceive not. Make the heart of this people fat, and make their ears heavy, and shut their eyes, lest they see with their eyes, and hear with their ears, and understand with their heart, and convert, and be healed." There's a warning message here, and a message of hope that is intended to prepare for something great. And yet the average person can hear these words, they can be inspired by them momentarily, but they carry on with their ways. Nonetheless, God does want us to declare this warning, and we do understand, and what a blessing that is. Verse 11 says, "Then said I, 'Lord, how long?' And he answered, 'Until cities be wasted without inhabitant, and the houses without man, and the land be utterly desolate, and the Eternal have removed men far away, and there be a great forsaking in the midst of the land.'" So there is a message to go out. Until there is nuclear devastation, cities without inhabitant. That example that I read to you of New York City, just one small, relatively small nuclear device leveling 20 square miles, killing nearly a million people. One device that was tested yesterday, about the same yield. That's just one device. It's not an easy message, is it? And yet it has to be talked about. We have to talk about the reality of these times. And those that support this work have taken on that challenge of supporting that message. We've basically responded saying, "Here am I, send me." Now, the most effective way we reach the world is through our program, The Key of David, with Gerald Fleury. And he's recorded several new programs over the past couple months. Hard messages, really. They were messages that were given at a public appearance campaign, talking about the law, talking about the reality of prophecy and the hope that's in prophecy. Last week, we aired a program entitled Charlottesville Violence, The Real Danger is Invisible. What does that mean? Well, if you watch the program, you see that basically God is exposing Satan and the demons that are stirring problems on this planet. They're confined to the earth. They're here all around us. That's a reality, whether we accept it or not. And so that program is aired, and we have a great response. Just this last weekend, just yesterday, we aired a program entitled The Little Book, and it will be one of our most responsive programs of the year. It's very encouraging to see several thousand copies of Malachi's message and the Little Book booklet being requested and sent out. Great books, really powerful books that explain what's going on in this church, in God's church in this end time, and talking about prophecy and how it ties back to Mystery of the Ages, a book of great hope. And so Isaiah was commissioned, we're commissioned to talk about very difficult times. We do comment on the news, but if you've noticed, all of our articles, all of our booklets, all of our messages look beyond the trouble. We don't ignore it. We don't hide from it. We do comment on it. But God is talking about a much more beautiful, peaceful time that lies just ahead of us. Now, we're rapidly approaching the fall holy days in God's church. There are commanded assemblies. You can study Leviticus chapter 23. If you have time to learn and be educated about these holy days, they're really not too familiar with this world. Some of the Jews that are more into their Bibles understand that these days are commanded, and they keep them in their way. But God has a way of educating us into how to worship Him, and we're commanded to come before Him on these fall holy days to learn. We'll hear 16 different sermons over about 3 weeks. We have a wealth of educational materials to explain the meaning and the purpose of these holy days. Again, the book that was offered in the ad on this program, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, a book that I'm reading right now, very, very inspiring. And again, very practical. It's not just some kind of a pretty platitude to say, well, after Christ comes back, everything's going to be better. It gives you very specific examples of how God is going to address the problems and make some corrections. Now, for those in God's truth, this time of year is a highlight as we celebrate these fall holy days, the Feast of Trumpets, the Day of Atonement, the Feast of Tabernacles, the Last Great Day. Have you ever heard of those days? Well, I know many of us have that are listening to this program, but it's a great time for us to go back and review the real meaning behind these days. We have a booklet, Pagan Holidays, or God's Holy Days, which we have correspondence course lessons that teach specifically about the meaning of each day. And again, the Wonderful World Tomorrow booklet, not to mention Mystery of the Ages. Now, I'll come back in a few minutes and explain to you the price for each of those books that we pay as the church. Of course, all of our material is given away free. It's intended to educate. It's intended to bring hope and understanding in this very troubled world. As we go through these holy days, it's really a very dramatic pass through events. And we come to the most exciting and inspiring day of history in the universe. The reality is Jesus Christ is about to return. And that should really lift us up. That should give us hope. We need to be focused on that. There are some terrifying times on the horizon, but not too far beyond those. We find that Jesus Christ returns. We find a time of education, a time of building anew, a world of hope, a world that returns to family, to law, and opportunity. You see, man had been given 6,000 or has 6,000 years of trying to govern himself, and that time is about to expire. And we see that man has failed miserably, but after that comes the wonderful world tomorrow. I'll give you a great prophecy as an example to study, Jeremiah 32, and I'll read about 5 verses here. Verse 37 says, "Behold, this is God speaking, I will gather them out of all the countries where I have driven them in mine anger and in my fury and in great wrath, and I will bring them again unto this place and will cause them to dwell safely." See, God is correcting mankind. God is the one that is causing or allowing these events to happen, but there's a purpose. It is correction for mankind. But the fruits of that correction, as God says here, is to bring a world where they will dwell safely. Verse 38 says, "They shall be my people, and I will be their God. I will give them one heart, one way, that they may fear me forever, for the good of them and of their children after them." Let me carry on here. Verse 40 says, "And I will make an everlasting covenant with them. I will not turn away from them from doing them good, but I will put my fear in their hearts, that they shall not depart from me. Yea, I will rejoice over them to do good for them. I will plant them in this land assuredly with my whole heart and with my whole soul. For thus says the Eternal, like as I have brought all this great evil upon this people, so will I bring upon them all the good that I have promised them." That's a hard message for this world to accept, that God has brought all of this evil upon them. But if you continue with that verse, God says he's going to bring all the good, and he's talking about an eternal good for all men, and that is part of our message. We'll come back after the break and look at one more disaster that mankind is attempting to contain.
You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Could anything be more mysterious than the question of the unseen spirit world? Angelic beings have always been a mystery to people on the earth. Do angels actually exist? Is there, in fact, a Satan, the devil? Is Satan a literal, immortal being? Did God create a devil? To understand more about the mystery of angels and evil spirits, be sure to request Herbert W. Armstrong's masterful work, Mystery of the Ages. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. The relatively new science of archaeology, the digging up and study of the material remains of man's past, has confirmed without question the historical accuracy of the Bible. Solid, documented evidence, apart from the Bible, confirms events and persons that at one time were known to us only from Scripture. The Bible is real, and you need to pay attention to it. Call now and request your free copy of The Authority of the Bible. This lesson, which comes from the Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course, blows the dust off your Bible. You will learn how to mine the treasures buried in the greatest book on earth. You can discover its secrets and enrich your life today. For more information, please visit thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily.
Well, this holiday weekend will also be consumed by those cleaning up after Hurricane Harvey in Texas and Louisiana. I've been watching this story, as pretty much everybody else in the world, been watching it with a lot of interest to not only see the devastation, but to watch the relief efforts that follow. Let me just remind you of Hurricane Harvey and some of the staggering statistics, really. It was a 1,000-year flood for Texas. I mean, meaning that once in 1,000 years, you can expect a flood of this magnitude. I remember watching the news, and they interviewed a lady that had suffered through this, and obviously it's very emotional, and I'm not critical of her, but she was very critical of the response of those that came to assist. And she talked about how unprepared they were. And it just struck me that, well, this is a 1,000-year event. How do you prepare for something like that? Hurricane Harvey is said to have affected more than 200,000 homes. More than 12,600 are labeled as absolutely destroyed. Toxic waters continue to drain through the city, out through the fields. There is a story, I believe, over the weekend about 13 Superfund sites that basically those are government-designated sites that are heavily polluted, which will receive government aid to be cleaned up. They've been designated that way for years. Well, those 13 of those sites were flooded or damaged. And so all of that pollution that they were trying to contain and clean up has now been spread by these devastating floodwaters. I have an article here from Business Insider, and this really surprised me. The headline is, Hurricane Harvey is the 10th natural disaster in 2017 to cause more than $1 billion in damage. This is the 10th time already this year that we've had a billion-dollar-plus event, a natural disaster event that's afflicting the United States of America. This article from September 2nd says flooding and storm damage in Texas and Louisiana is expected to cost as much as $100 billion to clean up and repair the damage. $100 billion. Harvey is the 10th weather event to cause over $1 billion in economic damage this year. Hurricanes are the most frequent $1 billion disasters and are also the costliest on average between 1980 and 2017. Now listen to this. It says the number of events is also noteworthy because the average since 1980, even adjusting for inflation, is just 5.5 $1 billion events a year. In the last 5 years, the average is 10.6, meaning one more event could put 2017 above average. And so if you just try to analyze the cost of these disasters, they've essentially doubled since 1980, the number of them that range over $1 billion. That's a troubling thought. Is God trying to get our attention? Stephen Fleury talked about that last week. Are these things natural? Are they just caused by man? Or is there something bigger that's happening to this nation? This article says, during the first half of 2017, January through June, the U.S. experienced a rapid succession of disaster events, which follows the near-record number of billion-dollar disasters that impacted the U.S. in 2016. So last year was near-record. This year is on pace to outstrip that. I'll just remind you of these 10 disasters, because I didn't remember hardly any of them. That's how active this world is with prophecy and terrible events. It's hard to remember these disasters. Each one of these resulted in at least $1 billion worth of damage. There was flooding in California in February, a hailstorm in Colorado in May. There was a severe weather outbreak in the southeast United States in March, a hailstorm in Minnesota in June. Tornadoes ripped through the Midwest in March. Tornadoes ripped through the central United States in February. Flooding in Missouri and Arkansas back in April and May. Tornadoes in the south in January. Over $1 billion worth of damage from tornadoes in the middle of winter. There is a freeze in the southeast United States in March, and then Harvey in Texas and Louisiana here in August. That's a lot of disaster. The Business Insider also talked about some of the other impacts, economic impacts, and they kind of went through the various sectors of the economy and how they'd be affected by this flooding and by the hurricane. They said here that up to 500,000 flooded cars and trucks could be scrapped. And then it says auto insurers will deal with claims for several months. And so you start to look at all of this disaster. And as everybody has been saying, you know, it's not going to end with cleanup this weekend. We're looking at a long-term impact on Texas and Louisiana. But, of course, news carries on. The football season started. There's politics and intrigue, movies. You just go through the list, and before you know it, we'll all forget about Harvey. It'll be the 10th, very huge disaster. It'll be harder to forget about it. But nonetheless, we'll move on. So how do we deal with these kinds of problems? There's an article here about not falling for Hurricane Harvey charity scams. The Internal Revenue Service has a page devoted to how to avoid being scammed. One really neat quality, or very redeeming quality, of the end time Israelite people is their willingness to sacrifice personally to help individuals deal with disaster. But how is the nation going to cope with these multi-billion dollar disasters? We're $20 trillion in debt. We're just about to have to raise the debt ceiling to keep the government open. And all of a sudden, there's a new $100 billion expense. The government can't sustain all of this cost very long. So how do we help the victims of Harvey? Well, there's a lot of news right now about charitable donations, fundraising, giving relief. Antifa has come to the party. I'm just kidding. They didn't come. Other radical hate groups haven't stopped their protests. They haven't stopped their violence. No, they're not part of the relief. They don't really seem to care. What about the media companies? I mean, they're thriving with news coverage. They're thriving with ad sales during this type of an event where there's, you know, a lot of people watching the news. It's good business for them. They're profiting from the disasters. Are they contributing to the relief effort? Again, it was brought out last week. They'll toot their own horn about their rescue efforts from their reporters, saving cats or maybe people. I don't want to diminish it too much, but that's how they're helping deal with these disasters. Well, they're on camera and they're saving lives. There's a professional football player that is getting a lot of attention recently. His name is J.J. Watt. And watching his fundraising drive, I think, is more exciting than watching the Houston Texans actually play football. He started a project out of the goodness of his heart. He's a good guy in many ways. And there has been an admirable response. They continue to increase their goals to have more and more money gathered to provide relief for those that suffered through this hurricane and through the flooding disaster. And there's a lot of high-profile personalities making significant contributions. Let me read to you from a story on ESPN.com from Friday, September 1st. And this particular article, they update time and time again here because more and more people are giving to this relief fund. The article says, J.J. Watt started an online fundraiser Sunday to aid victims of Hurricane Harvey with a modest goal of $200,000. On Friday, the amount donated surpassed his updated goal of $17 million. His new goal now, $20 million. On Saturday, he announced that the fundraiser had reached $17 million and shared a video of himself and numerous helpers unloading 9 semi-trailers of supplies donated for Houston relief. Among those donating Friday was Arnold Schwarzenegger, who said he contributed $100,000 to the effort. Mr. Schwarzenegger said, quote, "You can just set new goals because you are the champion and I admire you. You are the best." Pretty uplifting words, right? Going down a little bit further in this article, J.J. Watt made this statement on CNN's Anderson Cooper 360 program. He said, "We have about 9 semi-trucks that are going to come to town. And we have all those filled with stocks, supplies, water, food, clothing, everything. So we're going to give that out this weekend." 9 trucks. I want you to think about everything that's going on here. This all sounds wonderful. And again, I do applaud those that are stepping forward to give, to try to assist. But 9 trucks. 9 semi-trucks is a lot. Might fill up a neighborhood Walmart store to restock it after a week's worth of shopping. I don't know. I'm not real familiar with that. But 9 trucks with food and water and clothing for how many hundreds of thousands of victims? A little further down, it says he made an initial, this is J.J. Watt, made an initial $100,000 donation on Sunday when he started the relief effort. That fund has received a $1 million donation from Tennessee Titans owner Amy Adams Strunk and talk show host Ellen DeGeneres, who partnered with Walmart on her gift. So $1 million from the Titans and $1 million from Ellen DeGeneres and Walmart. Now, let me tell you a little bit about this Ellen DeGeneres donation. This is, I'm sorry, I don't have the source here, but let me just quote to you. This is during an episode of the Ellen DeGeneres Show, which is set to air September 7th. She's a daytime host who already pledged $50,000 of her own money for relief efforts and presented a $1 million check courtesy of Walmart to pro football player J.J. Watt's Harvey fundraising initiative. Ellen DeGeneres presents a check for $1 million to football player J.J. Watt on episode of her talk show September 7th. And so Ellen DeGeneres is handing over a check. And yet when you study the media, it almost comes across as though she's giving the $1 million. Ellen DeGeneres pledged $50,000 of her own money. Now, let me just tell you a little bit about Ellen DeGeneres. Last year, she made $75 million. If you break that down to a daily earnings, she earns $211,000 per day. $211,000 per day. I'm sure this is before taxes and before she pays her agents and all the other expenses. And yet her gift of $50,000, which again sounds like a lot of money, that represents 6 hours of her year's wages. $50,000 out of $75 million. If she tithed according to the Bible, she would have donated $7.5 million through tithes. $7.5 million. Ellen gave $50,000. Down further in this article, it says Walmart is on track to donate over $20 million in cash and supplies to Hurricane Harvey relief. Ellen DeGeneres said it was an honor to help make this amazing gift from Walmart possible. Not to be outdone, Miley Cyrus was on the show with Ellen as they were in this spirit of giving, and she had some words here. She also made an emotional appearance on the same episode of Ellen when she revealed she intends to donate $500,000 to the cause. "I'm really happy to help in any way that I can," she said, "and I hope people understand and can put themselves in those people's shoes and just know what it feels like to have everything taken away." Miley Cyrus. Last year, she earned $76.5 million. I'm sorry, that was in 2014. She gave $500,000 to the effort. That's about one half of 1% of her income. She gave the equivalent of maybe 2 days worth of her earnings. And she, quote, hopes that people understand and can put themselves in those people's shoes and just know what it feels like to have everything taken away from you. I don't know about her life personally. I don't know if she's had everything taken away from her. I appreciate the fact she's giving to help support people in a time of trial. But really, this is just a drop in the bucket. If she really wanted people to understand, maybe she could have parted with a little bit more money. But beyond that, beyond the dollar amount, I want you to think of this. This article talks about Drake. He's a celebrity among a long list of famous pals, it says, of Kevin Hart. They all called on to donate in a video that was uploaded to Instagram. Ludacris, some type of a singer, shared his statement and a photo of him sharing relief with 50 families affected by Hurricane Harvey. He gave each of those 50 families $1,000. There's another group that shared their efforts on Instagram, and another that shared his intention to contribute on Twitter. Now, that's kind of shocking to me if you think about what's really going on. They are giving, but it's more of a PR stunt, in my opinion. If you think about what's really going on and the depth of their giving, this church receives periodically donations of $50,000 or even over $100,000 from individuals from time to time. And so giving that amount of money does have a significant impact on our work. But those people that give $100,000 to this work at a single time more than likely are not earning $75 million a year. This ESPN article concludes by saying the owners of the Texans, the Baltimore Ravens, each pledged $1 million to the United Way of Greater Houston for flood relief effort. The NFL Foundation matched the Texans' offer. The owners of the Atlanta Falcons, Detroit Lions, New England Patriots, and New York Jets each announced $1 million donations to the American Red Cross. Now, again, that's great to give that kind of money, but let me remind you, we're talking about $100 billion worth of need. And we're looking at million-dollar donations, again, of and by themselves, pretty significant, but in context of what could be given, and honestly, what should be tithed upon, it's really very minimal, to say the least. Let me infuriate you with an article from the Washington Post. This is from April 2015. I had no idea this was the case. The title is, "The NFL, or the National Football League, is dropping its tax-exempt status. Why that ends up helping them out." I had no idea, but the NFL, this massive entertainment industry, multi-billion dollars. In fact, they're supposed to have $14 billion worth of revenue this year. They were considered a tax-exempt entity. Now, Roger Goodell, who heads up that league, made this statement. He said, "The fact is that the business of the NFL has never been tax-exempt. Every dollar of income generated through television rights fees, licensing agreements, sponsorship, ticket sales, and other means is earned by 32 clubs and is taxable there." Oh, so it's not really tax exempt. Well, if you study how it's organized, the NFL, the league itself, not the individual teams that are owned by the league, but the league itself made $327 million in 2013. None of that was taxed, Mr. Goodell. Your salary comes out of that. The reason why they gave up their tax exempt status, it was because it was bad PR. Once it was revealed that they weren't paying taxes on their millions and millions of dollars, well, it became a PR problem. It was better to pay tax than to suffer negative PR. Now, I mentioned those football teams that donated millions of dollars. The Texans football team based in Houston is worth $1.85 billion. That's their book value. Their revenue in 2014 was $339 million. It's estimated that they had a profit of $65 million in 2014. They parted with $1 million. If you look at the owners of various NFL clubs, Jerry Jones is popular. He owns the Dallas Cowboys, or he's part of the ownership team there. His net worth is estimated at $5.2 billion. Jim Irsay from the Colts, $2.5 billion. Robert Kraft from the Patriots, $5.2 billion. And when you look up their bios online, that one of the things that first is mentioned is their philanthropy, how much they give. They do give back to the community, but not in a biblical proportion. Robert McNair owns the Texans. He's the majority owner. And he gave $10 million himself to the hurricane effort, or the relief effort. But just last year, to put this in context, he donated $5 million to the USC football program. Again, they promote his philanthropy. And he did give more than just about anybody else I had seen on a dollar amount. But he, too, is worth over $5 billion. And he gave about half as much as he gave to Harvey. He gave about half that amount to USC to improve their football facilities, as though they weren't adequate. So J.J. Watt and Miley Cyrus and Ellen DeGeneres and various hip-hop artists and football players, they have to feel pretty good about what they're doing. And in fact, I know they do, because they're taking every opportunity they can to tweet about it, to post videos of them doing things, sharing their efforts on Instagram. In Matthew 6, verse 1, it says, "Take heed that you do not your alms before men." The word alms there would probably be better defined today as charitable deeds. "Take heed that you do not your charitable deeds before men to be seen of them. Otherwise, you have no reward of your Father which is in heaven. Therefore, when you do your alms, do not sound a trumpet before you, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may have glory of men. Truly, I say unto you, they have their reward. But when you do alms," when you do something, God says you should do charitable deeds, "let not your left hand know what the right hand does, that your charitable deeds may be in secret, and your Father, which sees in secret himself, shall reward you openly." What a great statement from Christ. You see, the message we have from this world is difficult for them to hear. Thank you for giving, but next time, why don't you try giving and not saying a word about it? Why don't you consider the laws of tithing? Really, these charitable deeds that are spoken of here probably fall outside of regular tithing. God says you should be giving, you should be helping. But how do we help? How do we help address a $100 billion disaster, the 10th that's happened this year? How do we get in there and help? Well, I'll explain that to you in a moment, but I do want to make this state or quote Mr. Armstrong, a statement he made in a sermon about being a teacher. He gave this sermon in May 1984. He said, "Adam chose the tree of knowledge of good and evil. As I have said so many times, there is a certain good in humanity, unless he throws it all away and deliberately turns the other way completely. But human good falls far short of God's good. It is on a different level, in a different category altogether. God so loved the world, he gave his only begotten Son. Jesus loved the world as well. They spit in his face. Why, they beat him within, well, as I was going to say, an inch of his life. But he was disfigured, as you read in 53rd chapter of Isaiah and in the 52nd, as no man has ever been beaten, that is. He continues, "And yet the very ones who did that to him, he prayed, quote, 'Father, forgive them. They don't know what they are doing.' He loved them enough to die for them. And his death paid the penalty of their sins as they were doing it at that very moment. That's the kind of love humans don't have. And he had that kind of love. End quote. That's something very important for us to remember, that there is a human level of giving, a human level of good, but it doesn't reach God's level. We are called to be on God's level. God expects us to sacrifice, to stand up and say the hard things. How do we help Houston? How do we help this crippled nation that's ridden with debt, that's rattled by disaster, 10 times over $1 billion so far this year? How do we help them? God says you go out there and you warn them from me. That book that I've been talking about, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, costs this church 37 cents to print per copy. A $1 million donation from the Houston Texans would have bought 2.7 million copies of that book. Now, you might say, you think giving them a book is going to help them? And I might counter and say, well, giving them water today, maybe a new pair of socks from those 9 semi-trucks, is that going to change things? No, it's not. What changes this world is turning to God. These problems are too big for mankind. They're not too big for God. Other books that we produce, as I mentioned this weekend, Malachi's Message in the little booklet will be sent to all the viewers that requested them. It costs us about a dollar to give them that education. Mystery of the Ages costs about a dollar. If we wanted to put the Wonderful World Tomorrow booklet in the hands of every single person on this planet, it would only cost $2.8 billion. Now, I know $2.8 billion is a lot of money, but that's a fraction of the cost of Hurricane Harvey. That book provides solutions. It would change lives. It would restore blessing. It would result in a utopian society. Mankind is blind. Mankind is self-deceived. There is an inherent desire to help. I want to help the hurricane victims. You want to help them. J.J. Watt wants to help them. But is the answer giving them money? Or is the answer teaching them the truth? We're called upon to teach the truth. As Mr. Armstrong said, God so loved this world. He so loved Houston, he sent his son to die to pay for their sins. And that's what we're talking about. We're talking about repenting of sins. We'll have one more quick break and come back with just a few concluding comments.
The Trumpet Daily.
A turning point in recent history has gone almost entirely overlooked. Since that time, an unseen cause has brought about national and world troubles in unprecedented fashion. Crises are intensifying as never before. In our generation, we are seeing radical changes to culture, family, education, religion, science, finance, politics, international relations. Everything has been affected. You cannot understand events without recognizing this unseen cause. The United States has been shaken in astonishing fashion. Have you wondered why the world's number one superpower is declining so rapidly? Are you concerned about where the current administration is leading this country? The Bible provides penetrating insight into the invisible cause of society's decline. America is prophesied to fall before it rises again. The Bible also gives extraordinary insight into how that fall will come about. This insight puts the seriousness and urgency of current events in their true perspective. Understand what's in store for America and why. Visit thetrumpet.com and click on the Literature tab to request this free, enlightening booklet, America Under Attack.
From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
Well, as we wrap up today's program, I wanted to just give you a couple verses to meditate upon as you go through this week. Ezekiel 33, verse 11 says, "Say unto them, as I live, says the eternal God, I have no pleasure in the death of the wicked, but that the wicked turn from his way and live. Turn you from your evil ways, for why will you die, O house of Israel?" The choice is ours. God does give us a chance to back and support this work. God expects us to educate ourselves into the solutions that God has presented so that we can turn this world away from its death. God has proven his love for the world. He sent his son. Christ proved his love for this world. He died as payment for our sins. Jesus Christ told us right before he was crucified that greater love has no man than this, that he lay down his life for his friends. Are we laying down our lives in our studies, in our support? Do we look to God for the solutions and try to push aside our own petty thoughts? As we approach the fall holy days, this is, again, a very exciting time. And perhaps the most important reason for our excitement is the good news that will be discussed each day. Christ is returning. Satan is going to be bound and put away. The millennium begins a project of creating a new world based on God's law, His government, and led by His family. And then all of mankind that's ever been created, maybe 50 to 100 billion, will be resurrected to the challenge of living God's way and expanding that way into the universe. That's a pretty exciting message. And as we look from that one disaster and move on to the next, as we watch world events and prophecy being fulfilled, bear in mind the good news of where all of this is leading. Going back to Matthew chapter 6, where Christ taught us how to do charitable deeds, He also taught us how to pray there. And just like giving charitable deeds or giving your alms, Christ said we should pray in private with our Creator, not on Twitter, not on Instagram or other attention-grabbing efforts. Just practice pure religion, sincere, obedient, and motivated by true outgoing concern for others. Matthew 6, verse 9 says, "After this manner, therefore, pray you, Our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come. Thy will be done in earth as it is in heaven." That's how we're going to have solutions. Pray for God's kingdom. Submit yourself to God's will on earth now so that we can be used out there for all eternity, bringing the joy and the happiness and the prosperity that God intended all along. Thank you for listening today. Be strong, stay connected to all that God offers through this church, and pray that God's kingdom come.
Your source of understanding.